Welcome to this month's special guest interview.
This month, I'm very pleased to have Dr. Gifford Jones as my special expert guest. Dr. Gifford Jones is a graduate of the University of Toronto and the Harvard Medical School. He trained in general surgery at the Strong Memorial Hospital, University of Rochester, Montreal General Hospital, McGill University, and in gynecology at Harvard. He has also been a general practitioner, ship's surgeon, and hotel doctor. Dr. Gifford Jones' weekly medical column is published by 70 Canadian newspapers, 10 in the U.S., and an international newspaper, the Epoch Times. The readership is 6 million. His advice contains a solid dose of common sense, and he never sits on the fence with controversial issues. He is the author of 7 books, including The Healthy Barmaid and his autobiography, You're Going to Do What? Many years ago, Dr. Gifford Jones was successful in a fight to legalize heroin to help ease the pain of terminal cancer patients. His foundation at that time donated $500,000 to establish the Gifford Jones Professorship in Pain Control and Palliative Care at the University of Toronto Medical School. Good morning, Gif, and welcome to this month's edition of Sports Nutrition Update.
And good morning to you.
You know, our listeners will be interested in why you decided at whatever time to pursue a career as a medical doctor. Can you tell us all about it?
Well, it's rather a short story. When I was living in Niagara Falls, my home was right across from the Niagara Falls General Hospital. And as a young boy, I used to sit in the steps and watch the doctors come up every day, and I got to know a few of them. And some asked, what do you want to be when you grow older? And I said, well, I'd like to be a doctor, surgeon in particular. So they took me across to the hospital and went into the operating room, and I sort of got, you know, that was my first experience. And also, I got the feeling, too, that having a medical degree would lead into so many different directions, you know. I didn't know at the time I would be a hotel doctor, a ship surgeon, and family doctor, and all these other things, but it's a marvelous profession to get around the world and do different things, and I've loved it every moment of it.
Now, you're also a medical journalist, so does that experience give you any added insight over and above? You know, it requires investigation and writing and research and doing interviews. Does that give you any added bonus or insight over just practicing as a so-called normal, regular doctor?
Oh, it's the luckiest thing that ever happened to me. It's been just a huge, monumental experience because it's taken me in so many different directions. You know, just interviewing people like Linus Pauling, flying to Paris and interviewing to discover the AIDS virus, meeting the Queen's physician in London and doing an interview. All those things would have been impossible to do without a journalism career. And it's helped me, I suppose, to see the forest as well as the trees. It's been a huge, huge broadening experience. I would have been a narrow-minded surgeon, would not have realized, for instance, the cardiovascular things I've been talking about in the last year, that I certainly would have been very, very myopic physician compared to what I hopefully am now.
In the same vein, what about people that are committed to whatever they're doing in their line of work, and we can't all be journalists, but is there something or some advice you'd give them to help them not be so myopic in their own particular field? What can they do to stay more open-minded or aware of what's going on?
Oh, the best thing is to read. For instance, right now, I'm sure if I said or if you said to any Canadian doctor, do you know that you could cure polio, measles, encephalitis, meningitis, and even snake bite by giving intravenous vitamin C in big doses, they wouldn't believe you. They say, no, never heard of it. All they have to do is go to the internet and put in Dr. Klenner, K-L-E-N-N-E-R, back in 1950. He cured all these things with intravenous vitamin C when he was put in charge of a ward of 60 polio patients. It was 1950. I developed polio, too, when in my last year at Harvard Medical School. And here I was surrounded by all the great professors in Boston, and all they could do is look at me every morning and say, well, the paralysis is getting a little worse. If I had been lucky enough to be in North Carolina under the care of a family doctor who had absolutely no training in neurology, he would have given me 100,000 milligrams of vitamin C a day, as he did to those 60 patients for 14 days. They received that amount of vitamin C. And at the end of the day, not one of them developed paralysis. Not one. And here I was in the center of the universe, medically speaking, in many ways in those days, and none of the doctors, my eminent professors, were aware of that research going on. So yes, read. You learn an awful lot by picking up a book or going on the internet for that sort of thing.
I guess reading is what the other animals on the planet can't do.
That's right. We're very fortunate we can.
And it's unfortunate we don't take advantage of that gift. Now, I have met Pauling, and I love his research, and I actually spent some time with him, and I lived in Victoria, and I spent some time with Abram Hoffer, and then I met Matthias Rath, and I'm sure you know these wonderful men, these pioneers, and Tracy and I, my wife, we both take 10 grams of vitamin C every day. We've been doing that for at least, 25 years.
Yes.
And strongly believe in its value. So what do you think about vitamin C? What can you tell us, besides what you just told us, that could relate to maybe the athlete or people that are under a lot of stress in their lives pursuant to vitamin C therapy?
Well, you know, meeting Pauling was just a stroke of luck. A wonderful gentleman, just a wonderful gentleman who here he is. We had a hard time getting through biology in medical school, and here I'm talking to a Nobel Prize winner. The first thing he told me when I met him was animals make vitamin C and humans don't. And without that knowledge, I would have missed out on a tremendous amount of cardiovascular knowledge. I'm sure you and your students are aware of the fact that vitamin C is a vitamin we need to produce collagen, which is the glue that holds coronary cells together. And that without this, we've got a big epidemic of cardiovascular disease going on in Canada. In fact, the three things that are going to eventually bring our system to its knees are the epidemic of diabetes, the epidemic of obesity, and heart attack. And if I was a young person, and I understand you have a lot of young listeners, if I was young again, as soon as I could afford it, I would be taking high doses of vitamin C and lysine. So I, too, have been taking 10,000 milligrams of vitamin C a day for the last 16 years. And I also take 5,000 milligrams of lysine, the amino acid that makes the vascular wall stronger. I think if young people started that at a relatively early age, we could literally wipe out the epidemic of cardiovascular disease, not just in terms of coronary disease, but in terms of Manitoba, for instance, large numbers of bilateral amputations of legs are done on Aboriginal patients because they develop type 2 diabetes from obesity. And finally, they have gangrene of the leg requiring amputation. Terrible complication. A number of people with type 2 diabetes who go blind or end up on renal dialysis machines. All this could be literally decreased tremendously if people took high doses of vitamin C and lysine, but it's got to be high dose. You know, they were always saying to Dr. Pauling, there's no more scurvy around, so what's the big deal? Well, the big deal is you only need 10 milligrams of vitamin C to prevent scurvy, and you need 4,000 to 6,000 milligrams of vitamin C to prevent and reverse atherosclerosis in coronary arteries. And we now have proof, work done by Dr. Bush in England, that he should get the Nobel Prize for this experiment. He decided to see if he could decrease the number of eye infections underneath the contact lens. He was an optometrist. He said, I wonder if I gave 6,000 milligrams of C and 5,000 of lysine, whether we could decrease these infections. But he did another very important thing. He took a picture of the retina, the back part of the eye, which is the only place in the body where you can see our arteries and veins. He took it before he gave the vitamin C and lysine, and then a year later, he took repeat photos. And fortunately, he found that these people were not developing the infections that were developing earlier, but much more important, he found that the atherosclerotic lesions in the retinal arteries were fading away. You know, that's a Nobel Prize-winning discovery, and it's just a monumental discovery that you can, for the first time in history, literally cause a reversion of atherosclerosis, which means you're going to have better plumbing. Sir William Osler once said, you're lucky if you're born with good rubber. In other words, good arteries that are flexible and you don't develop hypertension. And, of course, if you take high doses of vitamin C and lysine, this is what happens. You do develop flexible, nice arteries.
Well, you've got a beautiful formula. It's on our kitchen table right now. We're taking it. Tracy met you at the recent CHFA West, and I didn't have a chance to talk to you, although I've seen you, I know of you, and I think it's just marvelous what you're doing, helping us all to understand this. But please take this opportunity to explain your formula, this Medi-C Plus, and what it can do and how it's helping people.
Well, Medi-C Plus is a high concentration of vitamin C and lysine, and one scoop contains 2,000 milligrams of C and 1,300 milligrams of lysine. So I take five scoops a day, which gives me my 10,000 milligrams. The reason I take 10,000, I'm really overdosing because the experimentation of Dr. Bush so that you can cause reversal of atherosclerosis and prevent atherosclerosis with 6,000 milligrams. So that I just got started on it, and since I've been since I'm alive and well 16 years later after a coronary, I don't want to change my formula. But I know I'm overdosing. But it's a high concentration of C and lysine, and it's a nice, easy-to-take powder. I put it in water or orange juice. I just religiously take it day after day. So that I think if we could get more young people to start that, not 6,000 milligrams at an early age, but gradually work up to it as they get older, we could literally wipe out coronary artery problems.
Now, what about, and I don't know whether I'm pronouncing it correctly, is it citronol? Is that the name of another formula? I was reading about that. Your products are distributed by Preferred Nutrition.
Right.
That's the manufacturer in Canada. And I looked at your page, and you had coenzyme Q10, Medi-C, and citronol. What is citronol all about?
Citronol is a combination of palm fruit extract and, in other words, citrus fruits. And it works by decreases the oxidation of the bad cholesterol. It decreases the inflammation in the arteries and oils the platelets, which all of these things mean you're less likely to have the platelets stick together and forming a blood clot. So we know that it decreases total cholesterol. It also decreases the bad cholesterol, decreases triglycerides, and increases the good cholesterol. So it's a very safe, natural remedy to bring cholesterol levels down. Mind you, if you were taking vitamin C and lysine in high doses and your arteries are open, then you're getting a double whammy. You're getting both the open arteries and also lowering your blood cholesterol at the same time. So it's a good combination. Matter of fact, what I make it a routine of doing, since many people in North America are low in magnesium, and study after study shows that people are not getting enough magnesium, I mix one scoop of a compound called MagSense. One scoop of MagSense with my Medi-C and mix it around with water in the morning and drink it. So it gives me enough vitamin C, lysine, plus magnesium, you know, to start the day.
Well, that's wonderful advice. Thank you for that. Moving on to another topic of major interest about heroin and as an alternative to morphine, and you are leading the crusade, championing the right, I guess, of people to make a choice. So I was unaware of this. I didn't know it was such a controversial issue. Can you tell us a little bit about what went on and what happened as a result of your influence?
That was a tough battle. I heard in Great Britain, this is going back about 25 years ago, I read that doctors in Great Britain for the last 90 years could use heroin to treat terminal cancer pain. And so I thought it would be a humanitarian task to bring that news to Canada. And so I wrote a New Year's resolution column back in 1979 that we should have heroin legalized for terminal cancer patients. I thought I would be looked on as, this would be a good deed. But immediately I was accused by the Canadian Cancer Society of being a headline-seeking medical journalist. I was accused by the RCMP and the hospital pharmacists and other pharmacists that I was just setting up a situation there would be break-ins in their stores and criminal activity for heroin. In other words, a lot of scars on my back from that column. In fact, I was criticized so severely that I decided to go to England and see what was going on. And so I flew over there, spent a week in Great Britain, mostly in London, and flew up to Edinburgh. I talked to the drug squad in Edinburgh. I talked to Scotland Yard in London, and they said to me, it's not true. We don't have any criminal activity here. In fact, breaking into pharmacies and so forth is not even on our list of priorities. I walked into the, for instance, the Great Ormond Street Hospital in London, talked to nurses and young children. They were giving young children 3 and 4 years of age who were dying of malignancy and in pain. They were not giving morphine, they were given heroin. And the reason they gave heroin is because the children said to them, it gives me a nice fuzzy feeling, made them feel better. Heroin goes through the blood-brain barrier 100 times faster than morphine. So it does give a euphoria. And that's why I also found out that in London, I was in a hospital one evening when 3 people with a heart attack came in. They immediately gave them an injection of heroin, took the pain away, and also gave them a euphoria, the feeling that, say, I may be not going to die after all. They were giving it to burned children. They were giving it to women in labor who were having difficult problems. In other words, I came back to Canada and wrote in my column that these organizations were distorting the truth, and they were outright lying to the Canadian public. And finally, in 1984, heroin was legalized as a drug for terminal cancer patients. But it was one hell of a fight, a nasty fight. A lot of scars on my back from that one.
I can only imagine. You know, what I notice on the internet today, Giff, is that if you write anything, if you promote anything, if you come out with anything and it challenges status quo, if it's anti-convention, if it's true, then there is this rash of responses that are so cruel and so mean. It's just unbelievable. Now, I was born in 1957. You know, I'm only half your age. But when I grew up, this kind of approach, this kind of cruelty in conversation did not exist. There was some degree of respect. And I think now there's no shame in what people are doing. A lot of it, I guess, is anonymous. What do you think about this attack on you for trying to help people? What is that all about? What motivates people to do that?
Well, I think the reason being it was the fact that they did not like a medical journalist coming back to Canada and writing and saying, you've been wrong for 90 years. You know, no one likes to be told they've been wrong. And I was literally saying, well, you could have had this drug 90 years earlier if you had gone to England, done the research like I had done, and realized that here was a drug that was far superior to morphine. I wasn't saying, look, that you use heroin all the time, but it's nice to have that in your little black bag in case someone is in terminal pain and you can't treat it with any other drug. Common sense. Common sense. Going through the assisted suicide today, I don't believe that, I hope you agree with me, that if I have a loving dog that's dying in agony, I'm going to put it out of its misery. And yet we let people die miserable deaths in Canada because they won't allow assisted suicide or assisted medical help. So that we were all taught in medical school to relieve people of their pain, and I believe that is a humanitarian thing to do.
Yes, I agree with you completely. In fact, I have students in the Netherlands where it is legal, where Canadians go. And I'm 100% agreeable because, unlike many people, I believe my life is my own. It's nobody.
For sure.
And I'm a big Ayn Rand fan. And nobody gets to tell me how to live my life. And I agree that I can't hurt or harm people. But nobody has the right to tell me how to live my life or what I can and cannot put into my body. Now, I've got friends that are now dead from drug addiction and drug overdose, and I've got friends that struggle with food addiction, alcoholism. You know, it's all around us. You can't escape it. Usually we have family members, our own children or grandkids. What do you think about this prohibition against drugs? Do you think it's helping or hurting us? And what would you recommend as a policy? I'm sure you've given it some thought.
You're talking about natural remedies or prescription drugs?
I'm talking about recreational drugs.
I've been a supporter of marijuana legalization for years because we know that it will help people with conditions such as multiple sclerosis and others, Parkinson's, for instance, so that I've been for years written columns to the extent that we should legalize drugs. We're both in accord on that one.
It just seems so simple and straightforward. I read the book Common Sense by Thomas Paine, by the way, the fellow that influenced George Washington and Jefferson when they wrote the Declaration of Independence. He was that Englishman that said that nobody was going to make him become a serf, and he was in search of freedom, personal freedom.
For instance, I was in Germany right now and wanted to take some vitamin C. I'd have to get a doctor's prescription for it. It's crazy. if I'm dying in pain right now and want assisted suicide, I should have the right, the Charter of Rights and Freedoms should guarantee that for me. It doesn't. That's where it really, really fails us.
Yes, and what about Health Canada and the prohibition of access to a whole variety of natural remedies, which are quarantined and isolated and not available to the people who want them, and yet we can go across the line and do a mail order at the United States. And so, yeah, there's a lot of crazy stuff going on for sure.
Well, the point is that, you know, every year, 100,000 people die of prescription drugs in North America, and another 700,000 people are seen in the emergency of the hospital because of unintended consequences from prescription drugs. But I wrote a column just maybe 6, 7, 8 months ago, where are the dead bodies with natural remedies? There are none. I don't know of anyone who dies of a natural remedy in Canada. And so that's why I wrote this column, where are the dead bodies? They simply are none. Illness that can be treated with a natural remedy, it makes common sense to try that first before you try prescription medication. And yet there's a bit of a war going on right now where some of these natural remedies, which have been time-tested by time for years and years and years, are under attack.
Yes, that's the way it is, and thank you for that. Now, I want people to know how to get to you, how to get to your books, etc. So can you tell us about your websites and your newsletters?
I have a website, www.docgif.com, www.docgif.com. And if they want to email me, it's docgif@simpatico.ca, docgif@simpatico.ca.
And what about your products? They're distributed by Preferred Nutrition in Canada. What is their website?
WWPNO.ca. WWPNO.ca. They are distributed by Preferred Nutrition, but they're manufactured by Natural Factors in Vancouver, which is a top quality company. I spent, matter of fact, 2 days there watching their quality control, and they can pick up 1/1,000,000th of a part of lead or mercury in any raw material that comes in. Amazing.
Yes, and that means, therefore, that supplements are actually much safer than some of the food that people take for granted.
Much safer than the processed foods we eat, which are loaded with salt and sugar and calories.
No doubt. You know, there's so much that we could discuss and our time is gone. What a pleasure to have you on the show, Gif. It's been remarkable. I would like to leave our listening audience with something from you. And what is your age and what year were you born?
1924. I'm in my 91st year now.
That's remarkable. So I would call you like an elder, you know, in the First Nations. This is a man who has a lot of life experience and is respected because of his age and also his behavior. And I can see that you've made marvelous contributions and you really, truly are that. So as an elder, as a mature man, as a man that's lived life and studied medicine and helped so many people, what is your advice to people today, to young people today, 16, okay, 17, 18, what is your advice in terms of living and the forecast for their life and their future?
Well, first of all, they should all decide to retire 10 years after they're dead. Never stop working. Get the bathroom scale out and don't gain weight. Step on it every day like I do. Exercise, eat moderately. And remember Pogo's advice. I think this really summarizes it. We've identified the enemy, and the enemy is us. And I think if we all looked on that, we should all practice preventive medicine. Rule number one, really, is to practice sound preventive medicine early in life. And the second rule is never, never, never to forget rule number one.
Dr. Gifford Jones has been my expert special guest. He's a graduate of the University of Toronto, the Harvard Medical School. He's a medical doctor and a journalist and a massive contributor to the health and wellness of millions through his newsletters and his columns. Gif, we thank you very much for being on our show today.
It's been my pleasure and would love to be on your show anytime. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
We hope you've enjoyed the topics discussed and our special guest interview on this edition of Sports Nutrition Update. SNU is produced monthly and is distributed internationally by the Corey Hawley Institute. To learn how you can subscribe to this unique and motivational audio program, please visit CoreyHawley.com or call us toll-free in the U.S. and Canada at 1-866-433-1595. That's 1-866-433-1595. This is Scott Barrett, wishing you the very best of health and fitness for life.
Represent his lifestyle. New way of life. Listen. It's SNU. Sing along, it's true. Yo, coming through straight. Malik with sports nutrition update. Prolong your life. Live long, stay strong, for it won't be long till your time is gone. So I sing this song to pass on wisdom. Hit us up at CoreyHawley.com. Love your life, live right, things will be alright. Knowledge is key, just follow our lead. You'll see ya changing heart and health, which leads to wealth and higher self-esteem. Follow your dreams and see. Follow your dreams and see.